When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast,
Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod.
It is a podcast about scary things and people who like being scared, but who are scared all the time and also like laughing. And that's it.
I think that's it.
And we're two comedians who've been friends for 14 years.
Oh, boy.
Soon to be more.
Yeah.
Soon to have a son.
Soon to have the podcast will have a son.
A skateboarding son. Yeah. Be played by a 30-year-old. Yeah, Andrew, you're my friend, you know?
You're my friend, and we are once again... I think this is going to happen every time Ann and I record in the same room from now on. Because, yeah, connecting in person, I mean, hell of a drug.
I'm addicted to it. I used to be introverted, and now anytime I spend time with anyone, I'm like... can I touch your face?
Yeah,
like,
we're all loud, effusive ants now.
We are.
Everybody, we are thrilled to kick off
Pride Month.
Pride Month, first and foremost.
Notorious gay icon.
This podcast. Yes. I mean, we are very thrilled to kick off Pride. And not unrelated to kicking off Pride. Who knows how long? We're going to say summer long for now, but we'll see how long it goes.
Yeah. We'll see if it gets a sequel.
Hey, a series that Anne and I like to call
Summer of Summers. Or Steven Summers Summer. You can vote in the comments of the podcast app, which doesn't have comment. You can just start typing.
Yeah. Instead of Angry Bird, it's a Quiet Ghost.
Yeah. What?
I don't know. Listen, has anyone else felt like maybe that COVID made your brain wet tissues?
Yes. I didn't even have COVID and I have long haul COVID. Mentally, I am done.
But every Friday for the foreseeable future, Anne and I are going to take some time looking at the filmography of visionary filmmaker
Steven Summers. Your favorite and ours.
Our collective favorite director. Famously, maybe most famously, director of The Mummy.
The Mummy.
Of 1999.
Don't come here and be like, which one?
Yeah.
First of all, if you're talking about the...
Boris Karloff
yeah. One, it's like, just go in your grave and be done with it. If you're asking me about the Tom Cruise one, like, who raised you?
I know.
Don't say, which one's your favorite? You know which one is my favorite.
If your favorite is the Tom Cruise one, then you eat only cotton candy ice cream. And I'm here to tell you that cotton candy is not a flavor. It's just sweet.
Oh my God. Jason eats cotton candy ice cream.
Jason. Wow. I'm so sorry. Can I ask, this is very off topic already. Cotton candy, does it taste different than just sweet?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I don't think it tastes necessarily like cotton candy.
Okay.
But it does have its own flavor that to me is absolutely delicious.
Okay.
And all its own. If I were to just put sugar ice cream,
sure,
it'd be totally different.
Okay, we're losing him. No, this is over. It's boyfriend of the pod, producer of the pod, in addition to Tracy Sorin, unpaid producer of the pod, Jason Hammonds. Thank you very much. And now, stop it. We're talking about Steven Summers.
Yes.
Now, Andrew and I famously have been friends. And what's happening? My favorite movie is The Mummy. If you cut open my heart, you'd find a little VHS copy of The Mummy.
Yes.
Andrew also loves
Deeply
the mummy.
Meaningful.
Yeah.
I've watched it. I would say Maybe it is one of the like top five movies that I've watched the most times. You know what I mean?
Got it.
There was a period of time in middle school where that was like the movie that was shown when there was like a party day.
Party day.
Yeah. But we can't just jump right into The Mummy. That would be unfair. That would go against the laws of storytelling.
I think it's too much. You have to be engaged before you get married.
Yes.
So we are easing in. We're doing things properly.
Exactly.
And so we are starting by Andrew's good guidance. Jason took a can of giant Arizona iced tea into the other room, but it's in a loft style apartment. So it just amplified the sound of shakok,
which is a very fitting noise for this movie that we're going to talk about today.
Yes. A can of iced tea being opened in a guest bedroom is
very loud, metallic sound.
Yes.
Liquid,
men trying to hide.
Wow.
And we're starting from the beginning.
Yes. We know that Stephen Sommers directed a Huck Finn movie with Elijah Wood. He did a Jungle Book movie as well. But we want to start with his love affair with the horror genre. And this first one that we're going to be discussing is indeed the film
Deep Rising. Good idea.
Anna, the year is 1998.
It is.
It is January 30th. The world is still abuzz with the high seas adventure, tragedy, and love story of the film Titanic.
They are. They love America. It loves the idea of a boat.
America in many ways is a boat, which is think about Titanic. You've got the steerage. Is that where?
Yeah.
I know. Not, I'm actually going to abandon ship.
In
on
your
this
eyes,
one.
It looked like you were catching my eye while a crazy person was telling a story. Except the crazy person telling the story was you. You're like, oh god.
But behind the shadow, the long shadow of Titanic, comes another big boat. And Anna, this movie's about it.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about the Argonautica?
I'm talking about the Argonautica.
A good third idea.
The fact that it's so, this movie is about a giant ship called the Argonautica. The ship is so big that it has a catchphrase. Catchphrase is "your fun ship."
Yes, that's right. Like four quarters into the movie, we see as neon sign that says "your fun ship." It's like,
okay, well.
I feel like if we had pitched for five more minutes, we would have found it, but okay.
Yeah, that's someone's nephew was in the office that day.
Also, I have to say, I'm wearing stretchy pants and sitting on a leather couch, and okay, I can't stop sliding.
This was my husband of the pod, Chris Ryan, is here. I made it known my concerns about a leather couch. I have also struggled with this. Many
goodbye. I'm going to hell. Dear listener, I am fully horizontal.
I've never been able. Also, pillows cannot stand this couch.
No.
No one. You'll sneeze in the bathroom and a pillow will slide off the couch.
You need magnets.
Yeah.
You need to put rebar in the middle of the couch.
Chris,
and magnets in all the pillows.
It needs a safety bar. Chris promises that as time goes on, leather couches become less slippery. They break in. Okay. So nothing inherently scary just about a big ship named the Argonautica.
No, I'm not scared yet. What of it?
The problem is, Anna, is that this is a sea monster movie.
Oh, does C stand for something? Is that a letter? Or are you saying like...
Wow.
Or like the ocean. The people are asking.
Yeah. What could it be? I'm certainly not in the position to make any sort of joke about it right now.
I wasn't even thinking about that, but okay.
Am I remembering correct? Was there a show called The C Word, but The C Word was cancer?
Yes.
Yeah.
You got that right.
That's the one joke that I would make, but I'm not going to do the connective tissue.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, it's a sea monster movie. It stars... first of all, Famke Janssen. Let's put her first and
foremost. I would say this is really her movie.
Yes.
I would say that. So the lead is a man who, say it with me, Treat Williams. We've all never heard these two words together before. And he was great.
Yes. Treat Williams, I'm a fan of his villainous work in the film The Phantom. He plays the bad guy. He has a mustache. He's very good.
Yeah. He's handsome in the face.
Yes.
He's got handsome hair.
What... what this movie very much smacks of and can be confirmed by our favorite book, Wikipedia, is that this was originally intended to be a Harrison Ford vehicle.
Yes.
And he is missed in this film.
He is sorely missed.
But I also get it. I get Harrison's
regrets.
Right. I get him reading it and being like, I don't think I want to be wet. And I don't think he made it past that.
No.
Yeah.
He doesn't connect as much as other leading men, I would say.
Correct.
And also, I would say this really could have been Famke's movie, but also was not meant to be her.
No.
This was, what was her name? Florian?
Floriana Grande? Claire Forlani.
Claire Forlani.
Forlelo.
Why can't I say her name?
I can't do
it. COVID.
Apparently, again, according to the book Wikipedia, that says that after 3 days of filming, she had to leave because she had creative differences with Steven.
And I looked up on IMDb. Apparently, the creative differences was that she wanted to dress more realistically as somebody who would be on a boat. And he said she was welcome to dress however she wanted when she was not the romantic lead of a movie.
Oh.
Which is the first time I've heard of Steven Sommers sort of being a villain.
That is, well, and it's funny because we were having this conversation. We literally just watched it. The beginning, very slinky red dress. The character,
which
is
like
a
makes
thief.
Sense. She's a supermodel. Put her in a red dress.
Yes.
Fine. Yes, she's on a big boat. The movie starts off. There's a big cruise liner. There's a big party. There's too many extras. There's too much going on. There's fire dancers next to scarf dancers, which is a design flaw.
The theme of this cruise ship is fraught.
It's a lot. It's the idea of Asia.
Right. It's kind of everywhere, but it's called the Argonautica, and the Argo is a Greek thing.
Yeah.
It is like travailing the South China Sea.
That's right. That's right.
And so there are Chinese dragons, but also there's a lot of kind of what appear to be sort of hula style dancing.
Yeah.
And kind of Polynesian drums.
It's like if Epcot had just Asia. It was specifically Berlin, but then like an entire half of the world.
It's pastiche in the laziest sense of the term.
Yes. Yeah.
But we were saying about Famke's wardrobe that at a certain point she is just dressed like one of the other mercenaries.
We see her go into like a crew clothes closet and like pull out stuff and like hold pants up against her body. Like, oh yeah, this will fit, which was nice.
Yeah. And I'm curious, I wonder if that was kind of inspired by the Claire Forlani conversation.
Yes. It's like when you audition for a commercial, you say something funny in your audition and then you see a hot person say what you said.
Oh.
It's like that sort of.
We know it.
But they're both, they were both equally hot.
Yeah.
That's not the issue.
But the basic, Anne and I were watching it. We had the subtitles on. I encourage you to read the Wikipedia if you're interested in the inner workings of the plot. The basic gist that I got, Nana, let me know how you feel
about
it.
This is good. Yeah.
So Treat Williams runs like a little boat company.
He runs a boat company.
And he is taking a kind of intimidating man and his crew somewhere.
He doesn't know where. The 80% of the lines in the first 30 minutes of the movie is, where the hell are we going?
Oh, that said
we're
six
in the
times.
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It was so bizarre to hear the lines, where are we going and where is everybody? Just so interchangeably said,
just
constantly.
Back and forth.
I also have to say, the supporting cast of this movie is stacked with people to the point of being distracting.
Yeah, this I've pointed it out. I'm sure listeners, you've experienced this when you watch a movie from before and a minor character is played by someone who then becomes a major star. Yes. It is so distracting. And there was a scene of multiple future major stars. It was Jaimon Hansu.
Yes.
Talking to the guy from Walking Dead.
Right. Cliff Curtis, who played Mamouli.
Just unbelievable, like very distracting.
Yeah. And so then you're watching and you're being like, oh, these are the stars of the movie. And then one of them gets an axe in the head, like minutes in.
Yes,
in a very unsettling way. The other thing that Anne and I noticed from the get go is we were like, "Wow, what an impressively diverse cast for an action movie in the late '90s."
Well, the monster makes his way through quickly.
Boy, oh boy, no sooner had we uttered the words diversity when the only two Asian women in the movie are killed off in different
scenes. Back to back. Spoiler alert. Spoiler what?
Spoiler Bert.
Spoiler Bert. Sorry.
So basically, as most sea monster movies go, now I can't think of it as being anything other than letter Z monster. Now I'm thinking Cookie Monster. Anyway.
Cookie.
So as most aquatic monster movies go, this big, huge ship is going along the ocean. It gets hit by a big monster. The monster invades the boat. Treat Williams realizes that these men who have hired him are essentially pirates.
Yeah. Their idea was to go on the boat and take stuff.
Yes.
Meanwhile, inside the boat, before the stuff goes down, Famke Janssen's walking around in her little red dress and she's like, she basically is dressed exactly like Julia Roberts from the, is it the opera scene from Pretty Woman, where she's walking around with her diamond necklace and like just pickpocketing people.
Yes.
And she's going into the vaults. She's trying to steal stuff. And there's just a vault full of diamonds on this boat. I don't know why that is.
I guess they make a big point of saying that everyone on this boat is rich. And the point made because the head of the boat says, "You're all rich."
Yeah. So I think sort of a Summersian pattern is someone making a big crazy speech at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
About like, here's the deal. And this was by the ship's captain whose wardrobe was sort of a proto Rick O'Connell from The Mummy.
That is a very
good
point.
A white button down with suspenders. Yeah, but he also was like a proto Mr. Burns because he has a "I'm a virgin, where's my glasses" kind of moment.
That's right.
Cowards wear glasses, another Summersian trope. Oh,
nerds. Summers is not a nerd fan.
He doesn't like nerd. This is jumping ahead, but like his hatred of nerds in these movies and like, "I'm the person in charge, so I'll be the one dictating how," it like seems like he has issues with suits and studio people, when the reality is he's been given unbelievable amounts of blank checks. Like, what happened?
I know.
Didn't you get to do whatever you wanted so many times? What's the problem?
It also was occurring to me that another Summersian quality is a love of protagonists and supporting characters with Irish last names.
Yes, you pointed this out.
We got Finnegan. We got Mulligan. In The Mummy, we've got O'Connell. I mean, we're just thick with Irishness in these movies.
In Van Helsing, there's little Timmy O'Tutu.
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The other thing, so this crew of pirates, it is very clear from the outset when we were talking about this that this movie is like a pre-edit of The Mummy.
Yes.
It's just there's too much of everything. So like,
which I would say is another Summersian sort of trope and / drawback is no filter.
Yes.
Get it all in there.
And that is it is the really delightful thing about so many of Stephen Sommers' like summer blockbuster movies, which are very a kid friendly in a way that it's funny, but it's scary, but it's mostly funny. And you're finding yourself rooting for charming antiheroes.
Right.
But this movie, kind of from the get go, we see the sea monster hit the boat. Extras are tumbling over into glass. People have blood drips on their heads.
There are so many scenes of like, women in their 50s being flung through a plate glass window in a ball gown. They do it 100 times to 100 different women. And it's all practical. There's nothing that's like, these are real. Like there has to have been like at least a dozen extras die on this crew.
I also will say, I know a segment that Anne and I cannot help but revisit in these movies is How Gay Is It?
Yeah.
And really early on, we get two bartendresses kissing lips.
They smooch.
Yeah. Which, what a thrill for a 1998 movie.
Yeah. You can tell that they're both straight, but like the trope of two straight girls kissing each other is so straight that it's almost queer.
Yes. And I mean, for this time period, you know, for the second Clinton administration, this is as gay as we're going to get in a movie theater, everybody.
This is straight. I also, another gay thing that happens is a woman smooching somebody while giving him stitches.
Very gay.
That's gay. Smooching someone while giving them stitches, that's like, that's a queer narrative.
Right. And furthermore, just to throw, to me, what maybe is the gayest line in the movie, the villain at one point says, "Give me the key, bitch," which I hate to repeat the joke.
Bitch.
Give me that key, bitch. And that's what, to me, I was like, that's a rude BFA person auditioning for a musical. That's how they address the piano player.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh, you'll never work again.
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess, Anna, we've just got to get to the scary thing of this movie.
Yeah, what is the monster of this movie?
The monster, from first appearances, seems to be several snake-like, wormy, velociraptor-headed things.
Yeah, they're like little tentacle guys that don't have suckers on them, I don't think.
No, just teeth.
It's just like a long sort of elephant trunk. And the mouth, I thought the mouth was very interesting. It was like a, it was like if you took your fingers and put them together and like had, I can't, this is a podcast, like picture sort of like, if you watch the movie Deep Rising, you'll picture what I'm picturing. But it, like the mouth had like multiple openings with teeth in it.
Right.
It was very scary. It looked, it was reminiscent, a future reminiscent of the Demogorgon from Stranger Things.
You're totally right.
Wow. But then it revealed a jaw and a mouth that was, I'm sorry to say, pretty vaginal.
Vaginal, yeah.
Very vaginal, very teeth, very sort of like the fear of woman. I would say also like the movie opens with a text card
right.
that says something about deep beneath the South China Sea, there is like deep holes that could hide the Himalayas.
Right.
And there are creatures down there that no one knows what they are and they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and it's in a very Stephen Sommers font too. I'd say another Sommersian trope. This is the font.
And it's not papyrus, which I appreciate.
It's not papyrus. The restraint.
Yeah. Yes.
The restraint, you can feel it of him not using papyrus is, it's the only time he's ever exercised restraint.
And I love that. Cause it's like you can break one rule. And for Stephen Sommers, he's like, the rule I'm breaking is that I'm following one rule. And that rule is I'm not going to use papyrus.
Yes.
You know? Okay. So yeah. So,
but which I, sorry to say, also feels like a fear of the feminine. The ocean is feminine. It's what? Deep in depths.
Yes.
It's secret.
This is so interesting because this film in a lot of the reviews gets compared to Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of kind of vaginal, like, coded woman, like fear of woman, queens, face huggers, everything kind of, the like the slits and things. But I wonder what it is. Cause this one, this movie doesn't really do much with that imagery, you know?
I would say it does. I wrote down vaginal imagery because there's a character who gets sucked through like a catwalk through a pre-made almond shaped like sliver in the middle. He gets eaten through like a reverse birth.
Oh.
He gets sucked slowly through it.
Yes.
Yeah, into the water.
That's
the
true.
Water, the wet, it's very vaginal. I'm sorry, this is film school. Did you think this was a podcast? No.
No, sorry.
This is college.
You're paying $50,000 a year to listen to this
At
podcast.
At least, plus meals.
Plus meals.
We're not paying for your lunch. I'm sorry.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
But the reveal is that these several tentacles belong to, let's just say it, it's a big octopus.
It's a big octopus.
Right. But the octopus has a face, which, surprise.
I was waiting for eyeballs. Here's the thing with movies, if something doesn't have eyeballs, I can't get that scared of it.
Yes.
Or I guess it's very scary if something doesn't have eyeballs because then you're not connecting to it.
Yeah.
But the eyes were also kind of elephantish.
I know. We a weird degree of pathos in the eyes when we finally see the monster.
They're very milky.
It grabs Treat Williams. It's eaten every one of the pirates. Really starting with the people of color first in a notable distressing way. It picks up Treat Williams. One of the tentacles punches treat Williams in the face.
Cocks back and punches him like a bar fight, yes. Which was satisfying, I have to say.
I love the thought because this, like, think about yourself picking up an ant and instead of crushing it, you just punch it with your finger.
You're just hurting your own finger at that
right,
point.
At that point. But the giant octopus turns around. We see a face. The other thing that I thought is, why does this thing need so many mouths? It's got a mouth on each tentacle.
Why are you so hungry?
And then it's got its own mouth on its face.
And then what? So where's the butthole?
Where's the butt? And there is a poop scene.
There is a poop scene. It doesn't feel like poop because it's so
it's gross.
Bony and bloody. Which,
yeah. Happy pride.
Happy pride. No. Anyway, so it's funny. Half our listeners are happy pride and the other half are like, he said husband and I am now gay. It's the world is a big place, you know?
That is true.
But yeah, so the way that it digests it, which I found this, like going back to like, what is the monster? I thought it was very spooky that it eats people. And then sort of like an owl will just regurgitate its skeleton. And then it's like half digested. There's a lot of, when they get on the boat, there's no people. It's just blood splashed everywhere.
Very scary.
And then eventually they find these very bloody skeletons. So it looks like red jello.
Yes.
Yeah, but everything is digested except for the eyes, which can't be scientific. No. But there is a scene where they cut open one of the tentacles and a half alive guy falls out. And he is... we can assume been half digested and he's being burned by acid and he turns around and half his face is digested and he's
it's a skeleton. He's screaming.
Scared
me very much.
Yeah. Like and the actor who played Billy, that character, his IMDb photo is, him in this role, which is nice. It's good. But, that to me felt like a proto Imhotep because you can see like the TMJ muscle in his jaw, and, like totally tendons right. and stuff. And like the exposed eyeball.
You're
right. Yeah. And like half his brain. Imhotep famously has this is the mummy from the mummy. Mm-hmm. He's got a big dent in his head.
Also foreshadowing for the mummy, which I will get to everything's fine. But is the melting of people, like just the images of melting, the poor workers get melted by salt acid in the mummy.
Yes.
Right? So there's a lot of melting in Stephen Sommers movies, which notable.
It's interesting.
It's spooky to see. It can be done with practical effects. And I think people like that.
People like it. They like cause and effect. And there's a lot of cause and effect in Stephen Sommers films.
Wow.
There is. You know what? Going back to cause and effect and the idea of workers being killed by salt acid, with these movies and with monster movies in general, you need to have a big enough cast that you can see the consequences of the scary thing by having less important characters be killed in the way that you're worried that our favorite characters will be killed.
Oh, yeah.
So like when you see, we just saw Army of the Dead, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they're like, we need a group of like 11 people. And it's like, why? Oh, okay. So we can like see the ways in which the zombies kill people without being too sad right away. And there's like 30, I wrote down 30 characters of equal importance in this.
Yes, that's so exactly it. People. We get too much information about all of them in a way that I did feel bad when each of them died.
Yeah. Well, that's the Stephen Sommers. That's the amazing. I feel like we've been shitting on him a lot because we love, but like that is the amazing thing. And his genius is the ability to use humor and little moments of pathos to make you love a character who really doesn't have that much screen time ultimately.
Yeah.
Like he loves Kevin J. O'Connor. That is his that's his Leonardo DiCaprio. Like he can't stop casting the student stuff.
I love that friendship.
I love it too. And I want to like watch them hang out.
I'm so curious.
I want to see them in each other's giant backyards.
Oh, I really hope the best for both of them. If you're listening, how could you not be?
How could you not be? First of all, what do you have, kids?
but yeah, there's something I do want to sing Stephen Sommers' praises for a bit because I think the childlike fun that he approaches so many of his films with is contagious. They all have this sort of Saturday afternoon quality of viewing pleasure. I watched this movie for the first time on a Saturday afternoon with the famous Warren Brothers.
Yay!
And the thing that we could hold on to because I was very scared of the melting people. is that the lead villainous character who owns the boat says the Argonautica in such a funny way. And it gave us a thing to laugh about all throughout the movie, where he says, like, instead of saying the Argonautica, every time he says it, he says, the Argonautica. And I think that awareness as a, yes, as a director, knowing that, like, this movie is going to be seen by sneaky kids, I think is very fun.
Stephen Sommers does seem to have the knowledge that, like, a 10-year-old is going to see this. It's going to freak them out badly.
Yes.
But they're going to love it.
Right.
It will warp them a little bit. But in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, there's something that's going to make you have to cover your eyes in his movies.
Right. And I think, and that is, we had this thought watching it where initially, and I do, I think this in some ways, like, because The Mummy is such a Mark II of this movie, it feels like, I think what he gets rid of in his, like, next iteration is, this movie is a little mean.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It lingers a little bit too much on suffering of people who we've gotten to know.
Yeah.
And in many ways, there's a scene where we're in, like, the monster's dumping ground where it, like, ejects all of the bodies it sucked dry. Mm-hmm. And the directorial choice to play the screams of the people, assumedly, like, from the moment they died earlier, echoing throughout that scene,
yes,
is, very effective, but also, like, in the Summers oeuvre, it gets a little too real.
It's a little too real. And, like, at the beginning of the movie, like, when we watch this whole boat, it's very crowded.
Yes.
Very crowded boat of people get absolutely pummeled to death.
Yes.
We don't hate them enough to see that happen.
Yeah.
Like, in The Mummy and in Van Helsing and these other future Summers movies, the people who die kind of deserve it on some level.
Almost always.
Like,
yeah,
the Americans in The Mummy, their sin is hubris,
yes,
and a lack of respect.
That's true.
But they're good people. And
right,
that's coming back, sort of looping back around to what we were talking about. Like, there are all these little moments, like Kevin J. O'Connor, he plays in The Mummy and Van Helsing in this movie, like the lovable scoundrel.
Yes.
But he has a girlfriend who he loves and, like, he's very sweet about. And, like, it just, there are these characters that, like, they're goofy and funny, but also, I'm just talking in circles at this point.
I like,
but, like,
it.
Thank you. He's able to make you care, but he doesn't spend a ton of time doing that.
Right.
And he doesn't do it until, like, way later in the movie.
I know.
Like, the first thing that happens for an hour and a half is, like, carnage and people going, like, oh, this shit. Like, the thing that I think is very unique about Stephen Sommers is, like, kind of riffs on the snakes. Why did it have to be snakes from Indiana Jones, where it's like, the idea that you can have this big epic movie with big epic movie stars, but the attitude is a little closer to, like, I'm having a rough day at the office. Like, I think that that's another part of his genius, is that he's able to have, like, there are all these moments of him and Famke Janssen looking at stuff and going, like, he says time to go, which is, again, something that Rick O'Connell says in The Mummy, time to go. And she goes, yeah, good idea.
Right,
like,
right,
that's sort of like, can you believe it? And another Stephen Sommers thing, there's just, like, this very Gen X, like, sardonic, nihilistic,
yeah,
like, what the hell is going on? That, like, there's a lot of questions in his movies.
Right.
A lot, the characters, there's a lot of, like, where the hell are we? What the hell is going on?
Where'd everybody go? Are you?
Yeah, he says the hell a lot, too, if you'll watch in his movies.
Yeah.
Where the hell are they? Where the hell am I?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it has that very Gen X, like, who cares?
That's a very good point.
I diagnosed him as Gen X. I don't know. I'll have to look at the dates, but
because there is something, honestly, it's like the two lead characters in this movie, Treat Williams and Famke Janssen, could very well be Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt from Mad About You. Like, there is, like, you kind of just take that sense of humor and drop it into a monster movie. And that's the sort of vibe.
Completely.
Anna, he is
a boomer.
You brought this up, which really stuck out to me in a good way, that, like, if this were Famke's movie, because she's a thief on board that ship trying to just rob a bunch of rich people, immediately we, the huddled masses watching this movie, are rooting for her, right?
Yes. We don't need Treat Williams on that random boat.
That's the thing.
Because the movie opens cutting back and forth between this random bomb boat and, like, big stupid party boat.
And it were like it. We would be fine. All respect to Treat Williams, who I do think is very charming and lovely in this movie. But structurally, if it were just Famke on the boat with some pirates who come aboard and are trying to rob it, she like they are two sides of the same coin. She's like upper class rob.
Upper class raw blob.
Help me.
Hello.
That's a grab.
Sir, and that's a big grab.
And you know what? That joined the Gribellion. But I think no. I know if there's already catchphrases.
It's fine.
I need to stop myself. but the idea of her kind of like trying to use her Machiavellian brain to get what she needs from these other robbers and get out of there alive, very interesting. And the character is instantly given less to do when Treat Williams shows up because they give her a gun, but she's not making money moves, you know?
She's not. She's not. Like, I have to say something that I'm realizing now that we have to give points to Stephen Sommers for. I would say, and this is for me to like give any kind of credit to a man for anything is enormous growth and testament to my therapist, whose name is private. it's actually none of your business and I'm offended that you've asked, but like, I do think that he has good female characters in his movies. I think that the way they come out is a little bit cynical in Hollywood where it's like, yeah, they have to like look hot and be tiny.
Right.
But like, I think that the way he shoots women is very, sorry, backing up. Uh-oh. The way that like, it's not like Michael Bay where he's like pointing slow motion on just her body. Like the way that she's shot is like she is Han Solo.
Yeah.
Like she is a beautiful hero.
That's very true.
It's not lingering and shitty. I think part of the reason we don't like Treat Williams as much in this movie as we like, say like Rick O'Connell or Hugh Jackman and Van Helsing mm-hmm. is because the camera is not being creepy at all to him.
Oh.
He's not shot. Like he's not, there's no erotics in the way that he is shot.
Right.
Which I do think is like a rookie mistake. That like, if you are a man, this is free advice. If mm-hmm. you are a straight man working in Hollywood, understand that your lead, who's a guy, is beautiful and like
right.
pretend for a second that he's a woman and just shoot him that way because that way people will like your movie more.
That is a really good point.
There's so many times where I watch a movie and I'm like, there are no women or gay men on this production at all because like the camera just like points at him. It's like it's the cinematic equivalent of an ID card photo where it's like, this is what he looks like. Okay. Anyway, we're going with the movie. Like, no, like, there are barely any close-ups on him. Every time the camera's on him, he's talking.
Right.
There's no, like, we don't get to see him think through things. Like, the movie is so jam-packed that we don't ever get to connect.
That's the thing. It is this...
Sorry, the pillow just made the Zoom slide off the couch.
Yeah, good Lord.
Oh, my God. So onto the dog. She's dead now.
This is why Lady Bird is very hesitant to get on the couch.
My God. She knows. She's upset that we're on the couch.
This is such a good point, Annette. And you make such a good distinction of like, it's not about being like leering and gross. It's just about recognizing when your lead looks good.
Yeah, you know? And like your lead does look good because guess what? It's a $45 million movie.
And Treat Williams is like a very attractive man, but the energy with which this is shot is more like dad's mad. Like that's the kind of like...
Yeah, it's like it understands the wrong things about Han Solo.
Yes.
It's like, oh, Han Solo is over it and doesn't care and is like rolling his eyes like, I'm just doing this job. It's like, no, Han Solo is actually one of our society's most beautiful people.
Yeah, he's
and
a plunging V-line neck.
Yeah, cinema doesn't have a ton of uggos who are like, this shit, like, that's not fun to watch, you know? Yeah, that would be my studio note for this movie. It's like, just give it, even if it's not like for erotic reasons, like you have to let us see the character think through something.
Yeah.
And there was just very little air, very little like people processing things, which makes sense to me because like you want a shortish runtime.
Right.
This is an enormous, every scene in this movie has like exploding floods and guts and monster and like lead actors standing in water. Like you can't keep them there that long. But it is like, I wish there had just been a little bit of breathing room.
I agree. We needed, here's my pitch for a thing that I think would have sold me on this movie a little more. If they had like, in Jurassic Park, there's like the ice cream scene. The kids get to like eat at the buffet. There's a bit, there's like a little bit of fantasy of like, oh, that's fun.
Right.
They're on this cruise ship filled with rich people. Could there have been like one fun, like gambling scene where they like play the slots and they're like, oh my gosh, I won. Like just one fun, silly thing.
There was no like trailer moment of them like dancing to a song or something. Right. Like the only music that happens is Muzak, Girl from Ipanema in the elevator, which like then later... his character's name wasn't Benny, but it was Kevin J. O'Connor. Ben, yeah. It's Benny was sort of singing along to it. And I was like, oh, that's funny. But like, there was no fun moment. You're exactly right. They were just constantly, there was also zero B plot whatsoever. It was just,
wow.
It was just the monster is coming.
You're right, because initially the B plot's Famke, and it's like, is she going to get the diamonds? And my thing was like, she should still be trying to get those diamonds. Like, Treat Williams should be like, we got to get out of here. I just want to survive. And she's like, I need those diamonds in that safe.
And it's interesting because that is Rick O'Connell.
Oh.
Rick O'Connell and the Mummy wants the treasure.
And right.
And sort of doesn't care about the job. And
that's good.
Evelyn wants the scholarship and the learning and the experience in the field. This was just Treat Williams was like, I'm just doing this for money, which is not compelling. Like, if it's like Happy Gilmore and he needs the money for his grandmother, right. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But like, if it's just, this is my job, I need the money, that's not interesting.
And
you're totally right, Andrew.
But you pointed this out, that there's no B plot. And the B plot is typically where maybe we have a little fun. And there's not really a whole lot of fun here. Yeah. It's that everyone is acting too rationally. In that, like, the survival is the most important thing. And we don't get any of the things about, like, that are fun and silly about saying, oh, I want this thing because it's meaningful to me for some silly reason. Here's a question, Anna.
Okay.
We've talked about who is not hot in this movie.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Who's hot? This is a good segment that we will come back to. Who's hot?
Yeah.
I would say a bunch of people are hot. I would say Famke is the hottest.
For sure.
Which, again, it feels like if you'd just gotten rid of Treat Williams and that whole fucking boat of people, this would have been an amazing movie.
I know.
And also, if there had been more color.
That is a
real... The only color... It was like Schindler's List. The only color was her red dress. It's terrible.
Oh, no, you're right.
And like the 2-second shot of a Chinese dragon, which was standing immediately next to the fire dancers. Separate them all.
I know. That is, where's the stage manager and where's the dramaturg?
Right? And they're both pissed off at that. They both quit. Who else is hot? What's his name? Not the guy from Walking Dead.
Oh, Cliff Curtis.
Cliff Curtis is hot. He's hot.
I'm tired of people pretending that he's not. He is.
He's hot. Why else is he a movie star? I'm sorry.
And Anna, you pointed out, and this might be a gag for everybody, but you pointed out the sleeper hot person in this movie, and it's Kevin J. O'Connor.
Here's the thing. I didn't know that he was hot because it feels like the thing of like Kevin J. O'Connor. Okay, he's Benny. He's got this little mustache. He's got a fez. Okay, he's Igor in Van Helsing. He's got
full prosthetics,
7 hours of things glued to his face.
Yeah.
This is a handsome man.
Yeah.
And I get that, like, you and your straight friend director, you're both straight guys. So, like, the idea of you looking hot in his movie is not going to happen because that's gay. Looking hot for girls is gay, famously. And there is something queer about a man dating a woman.
That
you know?
Is true. Queering of straightness.
Very queer to be straight at this point, you know? But... He's attractive and the camera loves him and they keep doing weird things to him to make him look weird. I would argue the thing that makes him less hot is his voice. I think his voice is very like wimpy, cowardy guy.
He's kind of putting on a Nicktoons mid-90s voice.
Yeah.
And the hair length. I think that's the big thing.
The hair length.
Men of Hollywood, men of the world. It's not a bad thing to have male pattern baldness.
It's not.
It's totally fine. But if your hair is quite long and scraggly, it's just you're not framing your face as well as you could.
We need for you to figure it out.
Yeah. But that was a good sleeper hit. I mean, there are very few women in this movie, which is
very few.
Also rare for
it. That's a Stephen Sommers thing. That's very true. Few but good female characters.
Yes.
Oh, the woman at the beginning on the boat.
Yes.
She was gorgeous.
And her nickname is Chick with the Muscles, which I also thought was fun.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Because she's, yeah, she, when we see her, she's screaming on the hood of the boat. Is it called the hood? On the stern? The stork? What is it? The turd? The turd. The front of the boat.
Yeah.
And she's just screaming and going like, fuck, in the rain while welding. And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah, I do like that. Cool.
That's not a stereotype of anything. Is someone going like, ah, fuck. That's not anything.
I did appreciate that. No, she was great. And I guess, I mean, we've already kind of talked about what are the things we would do to fix it. What occasion, like, who would you share this movie with? Who is this movie good for?
I think this is a fantastic movie for adult children to watch with their parents when it's on TNT.
I love that. That's a huge audience.
This is every kind of person that I can think of. I also think it was probably a good date movie.
Yeah, that's
like,
true. Because
it's like, but it's like, ugh.
It's not overtly horny enough that your date's going to be like, who's this creep?
The main horny thing is just the amount of goo that's dripping off of things in the movie, which is gay.
Goo is gay. And the fact that here's something I appreciated. At the end of the movie, spoiler alert, Famke kisses Treat. She just decides.
Yeah.
There's not been a romantic thing between the two of them. They've both just been working together. She looks at him and she's like, pulls him in, kiss. But it's very much like we've succeeded and not like suddenly I am this like love goddess, you know?
Yeah. No, it was. And she was like clearly into him.
Anna, if there's anything that you could ask Steven about this movie or anything you'd like to tell him, what do you think it would be?
I think it would be, I love the movie. So mummy, the mummy so much. Honestly, Andrew, that is what would come out of my mouth if I ever met this man. Like, hi. You ever try to talk to someone and just the word the comes out?
Yes, I have.
I would ask him, what were some surprising things you didn't think would come up as a result of shooting in a 3 feet of water for 2 months? Like, what were some of the issues you ran into?
That's really good.
This is why I shouldn't be a writer. The only things that are interesting to me are production things.
I think that they probably don't get questions like that all the time. Instead, it's like, who do you have beef with? Like, it's like, I want to hear.
People are constantly asking Stephen Sommers who you have beef with.
This is my thing. We were talking about this. You pointed this out when we were watching it, where you were like, oh, this is a ride. Like,
oh yeah, this is another segment we have. He's always thinking about the ride. What's the ride?
Right.
And to me, the ride is the moment at the end where they're on the ski-doo going through the hallways of the boat.
Yes. Which would be a great ride, by the way.
Would be a great ride. Yeah. There's a part where they bank turn into, they're like, we need to pick up speed to go up that ramp. And then go down a hallway really fast into a big room and then bank around and then see the monster coming through and they turn back around to go back.
I love it. It
just looks like a ride at Universal.
And my question for him in tandem with that is, did he picture it with a bright yellow 90s Ski-Doo? Because something about there's a lot of shots of the Ski-Doo. And it's was that a sponsored thing? Or was he or was that just how Ski-Doos looked back then?
Yeah, it was we wish we could paint it, but we can't or something. Because
clash with the, there's something kind of silly about it.
Maybe that was part of the point.
Oh,
was it's silly.
Yeah, that would be my question.
The idea is that it's silly.
What would we ever do if we met him? I mean, you just said.
I would fucking just start crying, I think. I would start crying and then I'd say, I work at SNL, so that he'd be like, oh, I am interested in you. And then I would throw up and I would throw up my one life raft of you have to find me interesting and then just piss. Wait, should we round out how gay is it or what's gay about it?
Okay, so are there any other things that are gay about it?
Covered. So there's a character with an alternate lifestyle haircut. He's got a side shave with lines.
Trevor Goddard, who played Kano in the 1995 Mortal Kombat.
God bless you for knowing
gay
that.
Gay icon.
That's gay. Lots of vaginal terror. We've talked about that. That's gay.
Yep.
Making a point by telling a long story about an octopus. That's gay.
Wow.
Treat Williams does that at some point. That's very gay. The line, I'm going to get my ass to the surface. That's gay.
Oh, and then the line after that is, I just hope to God those things aren't crawling all all over the boat. And I was like, Fire Island. That's gay.
Very gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I do hope to God. Yeah. Pardon me, but the woman sitting on the toilet and getting sucked through by the animal.
Yeah.
Getting your ass eaten in the bathroom during a party.
Wow.
That's gay.
That is very gay.
That's gay.
And,
I'm sorry. Also, she caught, he was on the ski-doo. He's on the front because he's a boy and she's on the back because he's a girl. And he's a girl. Sorry. And he is the creature's coming at them behind them. And he is able to put his rifle over his shoulder and he yells, cock it.
Yeah.
A couple times. And she like chunk, chunk.
Yeah.
Like cocks it for him over the shoulder. And I was like, that's the gayest thing that two straight people can do together.
That's essentially pegging.
That is pegging. Yeah. It was like weirdly very hot.
It was hot.
It wasn't even like, it wasn't even like about him at that point.
No, no. It's about the act.
It's about the act. It's not about the object of receiving it. It is about the act upon it.
I mean, you definitely for me, as you said, like getting your ass ate to death is canonically queer. Yeah. Boats, rich people on boats.
Rich people on boats going, ah!
Yeah, yeah.
<It's gay. laughs>
I know. And there at one point, the loop artists, the fact that they were doing the voices of like middle-aged women screaming, getting crushed to death.
That's very queer.
Yeah, that is queer.
Because that's queer.
A room full of artists being like, okay, that 55-year-old woman in a azure dress. Okay, she's getting stomped on by a man. Oh, like, like that is. I mean, that's drag and that's art and that's
yes.
Gay.
And I'm sure my cackle just now was very echoey, which an echoey cackle is very gay.
Yeah.
The line. Half of them are packing lipstick. Careful you don't get glossed.
Oh, yeah, that was catty.
Let's go through some great lines. Old Jezebel got it right in the brain pan. I'm not going to explain that one because I don't understand it either. This place looks post-evac. Total spooky town.
Yep.
Great line. This was a great exchange. Was this Famke Janssen and Kevin J. O'Connor? I can't remember, but it was, I don't like you. And then he says, you don't even know me. That's so funny.
That's a really good one. That was Trevor Goddard. Who had the streaks.
Oh, he said that to Benny.
Yeah.
Kevin J. O'Connor.
And when I said he's a gay icon, that actor is not gay, but Kano in that Mortal Kombat movie, I think awakened a lot of people's sexualities. Anyway.
Oh, so he's a gay icon.
Yeah. There are some really good lines in this.
And there's a great line that was apparently riffed by Kevin J. O'Connor where he turns to Famke Janssen and says, after they've been running a lot, can you suddenly get asthma or do you have to be born with it?
I love that.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
I like that.
And she kind of has a smirk too. It's like they're having, that is, you know what? That's the moment. That's when they're having fun.
That's when they're having fun.
Yeah.
And you know what? And thank you, Kevin J. O'Connor. And that will be something we come back to a lot. And also here's something for all you actors out there, something Famke Janssen does that's so brilliant. She smiles a lot. And you know what? People like when other people smile.
At one point, we had to pause the movie to get food, and the frame that we paused on, ladies and gentlemen, Chris, did you by chance get a picture of it? Ah, darn. Famke Janssen is one of
the... We have it for another 45 hours.
That's true. Famke Janssen is like one of the most traditionally beautiful people imaginable. Yes. We caught her in the one face she's ever made in her life that made her look like a normal person.
Like she had even one chin.
And I feel like the line on the screen was, it just said, gun cocks. And I think that's the last gay thing about this.
That was
movie.
The last gay thing. And she's like smiling with a double chin, which is a gay thing.
Oh yeah.
Smiling with a double chin is gay.
Yeah.
which means I was born gay.
The crossover.
And I still am.
The crossover of listeners for this episode. People searching out Deep Rising and also people who are willing to hear...
And people
gay
who just want to hear scary stories to tell in the dark.
I know. Wow.
You know what?
Thank you for coming along with us, everybody.
Yeah. Look, you know what? I would say, hold on. Sorry. I would say you're great, you know, and thank you for listening. And we should say this movie cost $45 million to make.
It sure did.
Did you guys hear me before when I said how much it made? Do you want to guess? Chris is guessing.
$45 million
to make? Yeah. He's guessing 18.
Jason,
do you want to guess?
62.
The answer, 11.2 million. Was that global or US?
I don't know.
Oh, it had to make a killing globally.
Because, but here's, this is why I have hope. And I think this should be a success story for Stephen Sommers and also for everyone else. You can lose $30 million in a movie, and then the movie you make after that can be The Mummy. International blockbuster.
And also, this is like a cult classic. This is a favorite movie.
Yes.
A total intake of 11.2. Girl, it's 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, but 87% of people on Google say that they liked it.
Okay.
Ebert included the film. Well, this is a good segment to come back to, which is what did Ebert say?
Oh, yes, that's great.
He included it on his most hated film list. This is from our favorite book, Wikipedia. Ebert called the film, quote, essentially an alien clone with a fresh paint job.
Oh, mean.
He could be mean. And you know what? This is something about Ebert. He doesn't like capers. He doesn't like a heightened supernatural spooky stuff.
Yes.
He said that his least favorite part of Home Alone was the
robbers.
The robbers and the booby traps. He was like, if only Home Alone didn't have the booby traps in it. It was like, excuse me.
Sir.
And he said he didn't like the part in What Lies Beneath where it turns into a ghost story, which is like, girl, read a room.
Yeah, read the room.
So sorry. But we've already said a lot of good things. What's genius about this movie? I'll start. The practical effects.
Yes.
Unbelievable. They had two models of the cruise ship were created. A 38-foot model for Sharts of the... Sharts?
Okay. Well...
38-foot model just for Sharts. It's big enough.
I'm so sorry.
If somebody does one, we can go to another part of the boat.
It's a little, this is a hidden Hollywood secret.
Oh my God, an 110-foot model for sinking.
I love that.
That is massive.
That is a huge, imagine building it and knowing that the purpose is to sink it.
No. I won't do it.
Sorry.
Oh, just that for a positive spin on that, Ty Burr for Entertainment Weekly called the film, quote, a tightly written, often howlingly funny aliens knockoff that and its portrayal of tough men and tougher women under pressure favorably recalls the work of Howard Hawks.
Oh.
And Bloody Disgusting wrote, excellent cast, state-of-the-art special effects, and terrific acting. This is a movie that should not be missed. I would agree with that. I don't think it should be missed.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
And then of it, Stephen Sommers will give him the last word. Of the review section, not yes. You can still talk. He said, quote, it didn't do a ton of business, but it had a very fervent following.
That's very sweet.
That's very sweet. And it did a lot on Blu-ray and DVD and VHS.
Oh, that's definitely how I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie, I you're going to have fun watching it for a variety of reasons. I would say the brilliant thing about it, which I can't believe I'm saying, because in the end, Anna, you and I both groaned. To end your movie, setting it up for such a sequel that is never going to happen.
Never
going
to happen.
I think the brilliantness of it is just go for broke. Step confidently in the sequel of your dreams. Because
this is so funny.
They land on, this is a big old spoiler alert, everybody. They land on an island and the last line of the movie, after escaping this huge monster, is another monster roar and then the trees on the island falling down near them to indicate another huge monster running towards them.
And then we see in the background a giant volcano.
Right. Are we to assume it's King Kong? Are we to assume it's a dinosaur or just some other ungodly monster?
We don't know.
Yeah.
See, and you say that you like the idea of boldly asking for a sequel. For me, I find this very... cringe inducing. I get so nervous when a movie's like, and give me a sequel, please. Goodbye. I'm like, don't ask for what you want. What are you doing? It took me so long. Jason had to tell me and my closest friend that we like each other and wanted to hang out with each other because he was like, I've listened to both of you say, I'll get out of your hair all year. And then he pointed out that we both wanted to have dinner with each other. And we're both saying like, you probably have plans. No, you probably have plans. And he had to be like, neither of you have plans and you want to hang out. I have very low self-esteem. And when a movie is like, give me another movie now, I don't relate to it.
I will say, now that you're saying this, it does remind me of when child actors at the end of their auditions tape say like, see you on set. And it's like, Oh no.
Have you seen this?
I have. Oh, I've seen it. And here's what I say to any of you who have children who are, please don't do this to them, and don't have their acting teachers do this. Like, it just is, it's hard for everybody. And it doesn't make anyone feel good, and it's not going to make your kid feel good. And
the best way to get what you want is to be good.
That's
you
true.
You shouldn't ask for it.
I'm just saying that what I admire the fact that Stephen Sommers is making this movie. He's like, and now next going to make The Mummy. And I'm just manifesting
that
this is going to happen for me.
And it also, he must have been some kind of wonder kid at the time, because the movie came out in 1998. And by that point, they're already in production on The Mummy.
Right.
Because Mummy is 99. So like, it feels like he got kind of the blank check for The Mummy before Deep Rising even came out. It seemed like people were just on board with this dude.
And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of like very businessy, boring reasons for that. But something I will say is, because this is a director who appears to have such a deep love of pulpy old movies, that plays very well in the room when you're talking with executives.
Yeah. He also, I can picture, it's funny you say the thing about the pitch, like with all the shit that's in his movies, like how jam-packed they are. That also must play well in a pitch because it's like, oh, there's enough.
A Ski-Doo? Yeah, they love it.
I've touched one of those.
My granddaughter screamed at me about that. I really had a great time talking about this movie with you. And
I've never been so happy in my life.
We've got so many more to cover.
We've got literally ones more.
Here's something I'm going to manifest right now. If anyone, there are 8,000 extras in this movie. If you were an extra on this movie,
if you worked on this movie in any capacity,
could you let us know?
If you did crafty, if you drove, if you are Stephen Sommers.
Yes, if you are please let us know. And that goes for all of the Stephen Sommers movies we're going to cover because he loves an extra.
Any connection you have, write in.
Please do.
That's Deep Rising.
I think that's Deep Rising.
And the original title of this movie was?
Tentacles,
which is also another name.
Yeah, it gets you ruin the surprise of it being an octopus.
Yes,
but yeah, I get that it is another
name. I get it. But anyway, that's our first installation in Stephen Sommers Summer or Summer of Summers.
Exactly. Please let us know what you're thinking about either of those names. If you hate this new direction for just the summer, please don't let us know. Anna,
don't
very tender.
Tell us. Yeah. I can't handle it. I am sensitive. I am a Taurus sun, Cancer moon, Cancer rising. I am tough on the surface, but I can't handle anything underneath. Stay away.
And one other thing you can do.
Get out.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod is executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Produced by Tracy Soren. Original theme music by Chris Ryan. Cover art by Bats Langley. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @ForeverDog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.